Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million. If I had
Baltimore based Saxon Jackson, tonight he's just met Weber on the board. This week futures down. What the hell? Down 29. This is. Well, we can deal with that. Down 29. NASDAQ futures down 47.50. Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So
you must be a multi-billionaire now because of how easy it is to predict what's happening in the stock market these days.
Yeah, he is a billionaire.
Yeah. It's so easy. I mean, actually, you know what, Brendan? To a certain extent, and it's allowed me to do to not, you know, go nuts on the thing, but it certainly allowed me to not sell calls in a protected program where normally you would get in trouble on something like this, where you'd run into your short calls and be chasing the damn things. We have not done that. So we've actually performed, even though we did way better than the market on the way down, we rolled our puts down, we've actually done almost as well as the market on the way up. So for the whole fiasco, I think we're doing better than most. Matter of fact, doing better just about all. Because we really have not, we just this week have bumped into a couple of calls we sold recently. And we've been able to roll them up okay. So, and the reason for that is, and again, you know, if anyone wants to take this as a shameless plug, please do, because we have room for a few more clients, but actually not that many more. This thing with the Fed, I've seen it so many times, Brendan. I've seen it so many times. I mean, I know that they are going to continue to buy this up. There's an amazing plot to this, and I can't figure out who the hell's doing it, but,
Well, see, I attribute that to billionaires like you and making this market, so that once you get your billions, then you can run for public office, whether it be governor or president.
Well, I'm not so sure I'd want the job right now. I think the people in charge have torn this country apart so much that it's now become to a question of relative stealing. It's a question of relative who's getting benefits, and to the point where you almost can't even conceive of who's getting what where. And I don't know how the hell. I don't think that the triumvirate of, you know, of Caesar, Washington, and Solomon together could put this Humpty Dumpty back together here. I really don't. I mean, I don't know how. Some of the people on the show, I'd like to think we could give it a try, but I don't know, Brennan. I honestly don't know. I mean, even though we have as much good counsel as there is, I mean, Maddie, we were talking to Wayne about, he was out with basketball players last night, and they ended up with a huge debate in the local saloon regarding, you know, some guys are conservative, guys that aren't. Some people are teachers, and people are pissed off. They're not teaching. They're getting paid. That kind of thing. I think it degenerates into. And I'm sorry, Manny, for taking what you just said, but what about look how much money Jeff Bezos is getting? What's the difference if a teacher here is getting paid a little too much? Blah blah blah. And yet now, if it's your number, it's okay for you. It's okay. But for other people, it's not. And then somebody brought up the point, well, if you don't like Bezos, why does your wife keep buying everything from Amazon? Well, why should you stop? It's just one, you know, it's funny. It's a difference. And I'm not talking about, you know, Mayberry, but my grandfather was a union worker. And if somehow or another some fool bought him a pair of blue jeans that weren't ash cash bagash, you took them back.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like he was going to try and change the world. I just don't want any non-union stuff in my house. No, he didn't. He didn't say the guy across the street had to do that or whatever. I just don't want it in my place. It was very simple to him. I'm a union guy. I don't want to wear, you know, overalls to work that weren't union made. And he didn't say.
I remember that too. Yeah. I grew up in the same way. My dad was a truck driver and a union guy, and was the same thing. Was very strong for the unions.
Yeah, you know, I don't see how it's not like, okay, somebody else does it, so like I get to do it. I mean, it's like, you know, on the expressway, somebody comes by at 90 miles an hour, five other idiots, you know, hit the pedal. I mean, this is a new world for me. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, I am going to be more optimistic. I'm going to think that we're going to get through this because this whole period that we're going through right now reminds me of a marathon that I ran going up the Great Wall of China. And as we're going up the Great Wall the second time on the way back, this guy next to me, who was part of our group, said, you know, this isn't the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's the hardest thing I've done in a long time. And when you look back at the course of our history, we've had some really, really dark times, really, really desperate times. And when you go back to economically 10 years ago, and then you go back in the Jimmy Carter years with the inflation, you go back to 68 with the riots and a lot of the stuff that's happening right now. I mean, you go back to the Great Depression, you go back to World War II. There's a lot of times we've had a lot of difficulty in our past, and we've come out of it. So I'm more optimistic. I do think it's going to happen, but it's going to be a bumpy road, and it's going to be it could be quite a while before we really get out of this.
When you say we come out of it, I'll say what they say on the trading floor. No, nothing intended. Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
No, I'm talking about the general public. I mean, people like you and Maddie and me, we'll get through this and maybe even better. I mean, like, with the way that you can predict the market and how the market's going to go based on your knowledge, you'll do okay looking back at this and in a bit of time, whether that's a year or whether it's 5 years or whether it's 6 months, I can't tell you. But I think that, you know, most of us, the three of us and people of our ilk, and many of the people in this country will get through this okay.
Here's how I'm going to push back on that, actually fairly dramatically, Brendan, is I have said on many occasions and certainly feel that because PTI is, I guess we're an industry that was, well, we're small enough to, I guess, maybe, I don't know if we're under the radar or if we're an industry where I guess we're in much of banking enough to where we were able to go to work when other people are supposed to stay home.
Uh-huh.
So we've come in and we haven't had, you know, great months, but it had been as good as the ones last year. Actually, the first month when this first all started happening was the best month we've had in a while. I'm very, very conscious of the houses I'm driving by where nobody's going to work. So when you say we, I mean, you are eminently able to go out and make money today. I think you've retired. I think you've got a pretty nice pension. I don't ask. It's not my business. You're going to be fine. I mean, I might be fine. Maddie's got a nice job working from home, and his company allows that, and he's actually working harder at home than he's had at work because he's got a couple new clients, and good for him. He deserves it. He's good at what he does. Every year I don't even know necessarily what he does, but I can just tell by the way he approaches it, he's better every year than he was the year before. You didn't hear that, Maddie. Cover your ears. But, you know, yeah, but I also know that on my block, there's at least two restaurants and bars that aren't coming back. I mean, you can't, those people, that to them is the house the person lost in 2008.
Uh-huh.
It's all their equity. Maybe they were, I won't say foolish enough, but misguided enough to believe their governor and say it was 15 days, then 45 days. And actually took money out of 401k or took money in their credit card to try and keep the place afloat, and only find out that these guys now, they cannot ratchet down from this. I mean, it's going to be 2 years from now, and you're not going to be able to sit at a bar. Because, I mean, we're into this incredibly horrible leadership on every level, in my opinion. And, the guy who put his whole life in the mattress store, or the jean store, or whatever, those people, you don't come back just because, you know, I mean, like the last night Tripoli was open before everybody closed down was on March 16th, I remember it. And I knew everybody was going to close the next day, so I went to the three places I liked the best. And one of the guys, the bartender, he's a flaming liberal. He's been on the show before. Doesn't make him, he's a terrific guy, but he's a, you know, very liberal. And he says, well, you know, we'll come back. I looked at him, I said, Scott, I don't care about we. I said, I know there's going to be a bar here. I just want you working here and Nick owning it. Looked at me and he goes, yeah, Chief, I never thought about it that way. I said, yeah, there'll be a place here. I just want it to be you guys. It's, I mean, that's that. Yes, someday, somewhere, some bleep president, whoever it happens to be, is going to say, hey, look, the numbers are back to where they were. Okay. It's like looking at the stock market right now. Look at the averages. We just hit a new record in a couple of them. Well, yeah, that's because another 5,000 businesses fell apart because you closed them, you idiots. And Amazon is even higher than it was. Because those people weren't in the stock market, in the S&P 500, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's who's the we?
You're absolutely right about that, that there will be people who, there'll be a lot of people who have lost their entire equity investment in what they put into their small businesses. And, at this point, you're right. I don't know how to handle that part of the equation. Because they have lost a lot, and I don't think that the small businesses will come back very easily. I'm not even sure how easy it's going to be for things like the travel industry to come back too quickly. But I do know that the travel industry, like American and United Airlines, for example, have a much better likelihood of surviving than the Tripoli.
Well, I will say that United Airlines, these people have gotten, we do the show all the time, Brennan, you and I always have this as somewhat of a theme, is we've become, this is no longer a competitive country. Mm-hmm. I know on many different levels. It is on some levels. I mean, the barbers are competitive, the ladies' hair salons are competitive, the saloons probably are competitive. And, but you finish one hand of competitive industries and you're struggling to make it through the other hand. You're certainly not getting to the toes, I don't think. I don't think I can get to the toes. We're going to make sure. But even you know, Cramer was on CNBC, and like I said, he's a brilliant man in a lot of ways. He knows so much more about some of these companies than I do. I'm very jealous, but I think his view of the whole thing in terms of the Fed and everybody else works about the economics of it. I don't think he's as educated in there as I am. So we just each have our spot. But even he, I will accuse him of having his head basically up to behind half these CEOs because he loves them. Last week said this is the biggest wealth transfer in history he's ever seen, where every single, except for the $1,200 you got, I mean, every single policy is benefiting the big companies, more so than the other guys. I mean, how much money are we going to give United Airlines? Mm-hmm. The stock's doubled. I mean, it was up another whatever yesterday. I mean, if you and I sat there, and you're better at balance sheets these days because I forgot how to do it, I'm going to say if you looked at United, and again, it's a hometown airline. I'm sure a lot of people listening work there. I don't want any bad to happen to United Airlines. I mean, it's not where I'm coming from. But if you look at the decisions of that board over the last 10 years, every single dime they made, they bought stock back in.
Well, that's what I was just going to raise with you, that how is it fair when you have companies getting a bailout like the airline industries or any other company that has used their tax savings from the tax bill from 17 to buy back stock instead of reinvesting in the company or instead of passing it down to their employees. I mean, that's another part of the problem, that they don't have the money on hand right now to continue their employees in a part-time basis because they've spent it on stock dividends and bonuses to their executives.
Why does anybody, I mean, if you read but I'd love to have him on as a guest. I don't even know how I can find a guy. William Kennedy from Freedom from Fear. When the Great Depression hit, J. Edgar Hoover was a huge business fan. He was a big businessman himself, very successful. he was a brilliant guy, and not like, you know, I was going to say, to compare him and Trump is like apples and oranges, because he was an engineer. He was doing engineering projects around the world. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover probably, in education and training in a lot of areas, is probably the smartest president we've ever had in terms of that
Did
kind of
stuff. Did you say J. Edgar Hoover?
Oh, without a doubt.
Was not
no,
a
no,
president.
J. Edgar
Herbert
Hoover?
No, it's Herbert Hoover. Sorry. No, J. Edgar Hoover was not a president. Although I think he had more power than some of the presidents. But, so maybe that was a Freudian slip. I don't know. But
yeah, he had information on him that made him a lot more powerful. But
yeah, he should have been president. I don't know. But I don't think he did a very good job. But no, Herbert Hoover. And so, but he went when the Depression started. He personally reached out to the heads of a lot of industries, a la Trump. And his comment was, I've never met more selfish people in my life. Why have I spent my life making sure these guys do okay when the chips are down, they don't come up with anything? So you can't count on... I mean, right now, see, here's the conundrum, Brendan. This thing hit so hard, and the people in government didn't do a very good job, stopping it in the spots they could have, letting people know earlier. They did a horrible job all along the way. Then they slammed the place down and kept it closed when they probably didn't need to. So there's an F all along the way, right? I'm not saying F of intentions, but F of outcome. And so you've got an airline. I don't care who you are. You could be the Solomon-run airline. You could not have survived this. So at times like this, do you need some help from somebody? If you wanted to keep going, the answer is yes. Just like bailing out Chrysler. You know, crazy times call for crazy stuff. And I never, even though I'm, you know, this laissez-faire capitalist to a degree, you know, if an asteroid lands on New York and kills 10 million people, we're going to have to bail out the insurance companies. It's just the way it is. You can't have an insurance company keep so much in arrears that they're set up for 10 million people dying on the same day. I mean, it's just too much, right? You can't do that. But now the question is... The board made a decision that every single dime went. Okay, well, pretty much every single dime went. Never did they show up at Boeing with a check for a plane. They all got leased. So the answer is we're going to have to bail these guys out to the tune of $30 billion, say. I'll pick a number. The number should be 15, right? Now, any other business that made that sort of a mistake is out of business. I mean, I know one of Audrey's relatives had a restaurant in Tennessee, and evidently from all purposes, he brought Chicago food down to Tennessee. And Brendan, he was kicking serious ass, for lack of a better term. I don't know if is that a business term?
And that's both a legal term and a business term, yes.
So this is like 2006 and a half. He locates a new spot where he finds out where people are driving maybe a little too far to come to his place. Says, okay, if I get to put a place there, I'll have two places. Now, not only will I be able to free up mine, which is jammed every night from people driving 30 miles, the people over there, you know, that don't want to drive 30 miles will have a place. Builds it, puts a bunch of dough in a thing, all of a sudden the 2007, 2008 crap hits. Economy is in a dumper. All of a sudden his first place that was jammed is now 20% full because that area got hit real hard. So the guy goes out of business. All right, so he's in our business world. Not every mistake you make is your fault, right?
True. Mm-hmm. Well, we're certainly seeing that now. This is not the fault of, especially the small business owners.
Okay, but I'm saying, but now the big people. Once you cross a certain line, no matter what screw up you made, is United Airlines, that board and that management should pay the price for their really dumb decision to buy all the stock back. I'm not saying that you don't want planes in the air for people. You do, but we can never put it together and walk in and say, I walk in as a president, I have a little Matty Weber sitting there, even though he's not little. Well, my man here, Matt, says that if you guys would have used your friggin' heads, the check I have to write you would be $15 billion less than it is. Now, I'm going to write you the check for $40 billion. But every one of you bleep holes around the table is going to tender his resignation. And by the way, you're going to kick back your bonuses from the last 4 years, and you're going to get the hell out of here, and you're never going to be on another board again. Is that fair? No, but it's no less fair than Audrey's relative bumping into the Fed screw up in 2008 where they weren't watching money coming from Japan and the leverage that was on these mortgages. They paid for that, not the people in the Fed. They're still tenured professors some places. So we got this thing now where the people who pay are never the people who cause the problem or are being paid to do something about it. I mean, you look at our Center for Disease Control. They're probably good people, Brendan. Just like the Major League, where Tom Berenger says to, what's his name, Sheen, is it Charlie Sheen or Martin? I don't know.
Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen says, this is the out you've waited your whole life for. This is a disease that we've been paying these guys for 30 years to watch out for. Well, they had SARS and all this stuff. And you blew it. Let's get some new people in here. I'm not saying you're bad people, you're this, that, and the other thing. This is the out you've been waiting your whole life to do, and you blew it. United Airlines, you know, if 30 of these planes were owned by you, the bailout would be 30% less. So, you know what? Get the hell out of here, all of you.
Does the same analysis go for Boeing?
Yes. Oh, without a doubt. The idea that you, without a doubt, the idea that they stuck their nose up at government and said, we're going to force you guys to certify this jet and we're going to keep producing it. I'm not saying that the what happened in the skies in terms of this pandemic is Boeing's fault, but nobody gets away with a decision to make 400 planes that you didn't sell and something like this happens. That's why you're cautious, right?
Well, the Boeing thing is because Boeing is in a different situation than United Airlines or the airline industries or the small businesses we've been talking about because their financial position right now is due in large part to the fact that they had a screw-up by manufacturing a plane that didn't work very well and caused a few hundred people to die in airline crashes. And that is malfeasance of some sort. There was a breakdown there that happened even before the pandemic hit. I think a company like Boeing is in a much different position than the airline industries or the restaurant industry. But there's been no real fallout for Boeing. And they're getting part of the bailout too.
Oh, a huge part. But I mean, they're just saying, well, let me get this straight. You guys, but you know, the reason why I'm so anti that decision at Boeing is I saw the exact same thing happen at Pullman. We did not have an approved car. We couldn't deliver it, railroad car, and we kept making them. And all of a sudden, we had, I don't know how many cars we had to retrofit. We lost $1 million a car, Brennan, on a $1 million car. I mean, how do you do that? By having people working, building stuff you can't deliver. And what did Boeing do? I mean, the hubris is... Matt, you know what hubris means?
I do.
Yes, you do. 15 years ago, would you have? I don't know, but...
You would if you knew if you ever took Greek mythology in high school or college.
Yes.
That's right.
And you had to do that, didn't you? I took all kinds of that stuff. I weaseled out of languages in Notre Dame by taking Greek mythology.
Well, it was not my strong suit.
Well, language was terrible, so I was better at the other stuff. At least as long as it was in English, I was okay with it.
But the thing about mythology is it's storytelling. You're really good at storytelling.
Well, that's what those guys were. they were good at that. But
they were...
No, what I'm saying is that though that's a decision that no other company can come back from. But because we've allowed them to be a monopoly, all of a sudden it's okay, right?
Yep.
Now, you know, is that what we really want to do? We've been bailing those guys out for how long?
Well, is that a situation where you really should have somebody, whether it's a president or somebody else, walk in and say, you guys screwed up. Everybody tender your resignation. All the senior administrators, officers tender your resignation. We'll get new guys in here to run Boeing.
I think if I could put my finger on, Brendan, that we talk about the politics, the single biggest degradation of responsibility, in my opinion, again, one man's opinion, in the last really 35, 40 years has been corporate boards. I don't know what they do. They don't manage the president. They don't manage the CEO. That's their job. They've been so co-opted, and they've gotten so much into the screen. You mean to tell me that there's not a guy on the Boeing board that said, wait, whoa, we're going to continue to produce 30 planes a month we can't deliver? What are you guys, out of your mind?
Well, it goes beyond that. I mean, it goes to the certification and the fact that once the first problem was seen with the plane in Ethiopia, that no action was taken. They were still insistent on letting the planes fly and not going back to say, what's really the problem here? Is there anything on our side that we're complicit for in doing this? But instead, the narrative was, no, it's very, very safe. It wasn't until the second plane happened that it turned out that they weren't given the right training to, or flight manuals to people in other airlines and other industries around the world. When they were selling it, they weren't telling the pilots in their training that they needed to do this or that in order to avoid the problem, or in some cases, the systems weren't working properly at all.
Well, it could be more...
Not even a decision that the board was making to continue making the planes. I mean, that's another complicit action that that caused the problem and that they turned a blind eye to just in order to keep their business, their doors open.
Well, Brent, we'll talk about it next week. It has more to do with they let us be a monopolist. We've got them by the balls, not the other way around. That's the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And that's so why did we let them become a monopolist? Good question.
Good question. And I go back to the conversation we've had a couple of times with Jeff on here about, a duopoly. And really, Boeing is kind of a duopoly with Airbus.
Well, they're the best one because
in the world.
Because they're competing with somebody overseas that we don't want to have win. So we give every favor in the world to one of the people in the duopoly. Anyway, we'll talk about it next week. Brent, take care of yourself. S&P futures right. Down 29, NASDAQ futures down 56, finally down a day. Well, who knows? We might turn around and be up. We never know. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just my word on the board. S&P futures down 30 now. NASDAQ futures down 57. Dow futures down about 295. We're in Europe. We've got DAX down 260. That's 2%. FTSE down 110. That's 1.7%. Remember, these guys weren't up that much yesterday. CAC around down 98. That's 1.9%. Say 2. We're in Asia. We've got Nikkei down 87. Not much because they've been off 0.4%. Shanghai up 18.6%. Hang Seng up 280. That's 1.1%. So mixed bag over there. Bonds. 0.83, the 10 years down from point, was almost made it to 0.9 yesterday. Bund is minus 0.32. Japan, back negative, minus point, they're positive, but they're negative today, down to 0.02%. They were 0.04. The, oil, we got oil 30, down 36 cents, 37, so used to saying up on this stuff. 37.83, Brent down 42 cents, $40.38. Natural gas, up a penny, $1.80. Our Bob, pretty much steady at $1.19. Gold is up, 11.50 to 17.16, back over 1700. Silver down 6 cents, 17.82. Copper unchanged at 2.57. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start here on a Tuesday morning. No issues coming in on the Ryan I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson and Eisenhower are all quiet as well, as are the Edens and Kennedy on the north side. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Suburban tollways are quiet too, Jeep. No accidents or closures or construction to speak of. We're just nice and clear this morning. I, of course, will let you know if that should change. Weather today, dry weather with warm temperatures early. Then some rain moving in this afternoon. We'll reach a high of 86 with showers this afternoon. Right now it's overcast, dry, and 74, going up to a rainy high of 86. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 95 today. Right now it's clear and 73. On this date in sports history, Chief, June 9th, we'll go back to a date that you remember, and Joel probably remembers too. Knowing the horse racing buffs that you guys are, on this date in 1973 was the 105th Belmont, and Secretariat won in 2 minutes and 24 seconds, becoming the first Triple Crown winner in 25 years on this date in 1973. Fast forward to 2010, on this date, June 9th, 2010, the Chicago Blackhawks, as you might recall, beat the Philadelphia Flyers 4-3 in overtime for a 4-2 series win to win the Stanley Cup Championship, the first Stanley Cup for the Blackhawks since 1961. Chief.
If you only watch one horse race in your life, that's the race you have to watch. The Belmont.
What a dominant performance.
What do you win by, 20-some lengths? I'm going to say it could be one of the single most incredible things I've ever seen in sports. Amazing. Never been a horse like him before or since. None of his kids, none of his grandkids, nothing, man. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Chief. Yeah, I remember that that race very, very well. You guys are aware that they are moving the order of the Triple Crown this year, correct?
Belmont's coming before the Preakness, right?
Yeah, and I am just... I mean, if you ever think that, you know, it's always a low probability, right, of getting a Triple Crown winner. I think the fact that they are running the Belmont first almost guarantees that you're not going to have a Triple Crown winner. Now, I know Baffert has a couple horses in his barn, and you always have the capability to do it. But doing that mile and a half first is just going to be absolutely grueling. And if you get through that, and then I think they're doing the Preakness and then the Derby, I just, the way these horses are, we'll see. I mean, I'll do the handicapping when it gets closer, but, man, having that Belmont first, that's just an absolutely grueling race.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but the order goes, the Kentucky Derby is a mile and a quarter?
Yep.
Preakness is a mile and a 16th or an eighth?
Yep.
Which
teeny.
One?
Mile and teeny.
And then the Belmont, so you got somewhat of a, I won't say a rest in the middle, then the Belmont's a mile and a half, which is the grueler.
Yes. Yep. And typically what happens is, you know, you do the Derby, you get through that, you're fortunate enough to win the Preakness, and then horses drop out, you know. Sometimes you have a smaller field in the Belmont. But now, you know, with the Belmont being first, you know, everyone that thinks they have a pony that can go the distance is going to be in there. And then for the run, or they'll just rest them. They don't do the Belmont, they do the Preakness, and they bring the dynamic, you know, the fresh horse of the Kentucky Derby. But, yeah, it totally, something that has never happened before, and I'll be observing it. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Well,
the Belmont, you usually get the first two races to predicate your choice on.
Well, for years and years, the Preakness was the richest one, right? So you wanted to be in that one just for the money.
I can't verify that, the way they've done things with like the Visa Triple Crown and, the prestige of the Derby. I can't verify that.
No, I'm not talking last decade and a half. I'm saying traditionally they used to call it the richest jewel in the Triple Crown. Was the
If you say it, Chief, it must be true. Have you ever watched that movie, Secretariat?
I have not because, I don't know, I just haven't, but should.
It's a good movie. I mean, for me, you know, with the nostalgia of, you know, owning, you know, racehorses, and, well, my dad owning racehorses, growing up with it my entire life, and just really remembering that time, you know, like, following the dirt. I mean, it was a big deal then. It was, you know, there wasn't oldie sports, well, we're making a comparison now to oldie sports being on TV, but, you know, back then, it was a big deal. The Kentucky Derby and sports on TV. You had three channels or four channels to watch things on. So if you get a chance, it might be a little bit of a kid movie. I mean, it's a good story, but you really get into the dynamic of the horse and the relationship and, what the owner did to get him to that point. If you get a chance, I mean, you know.
Well, he was the Michael Jordan of horses. He was the second pick, right?
Exactly. And she tried to sell him back. She tried to, you know, work a deal to, his stud fees because she did not have, you know, they weren't well financed before the Triple Crown. And she actually offered the stud, you know, to put the horse, you know, to get the fees before he won the Triple Crown, and the guy that could have had Secretariat turned her down, and then everyone ended up paying all kinds of money for the stud fees. And you're right, he never did really produce any great horses. It's really an anomaly. Usually they, you know, those great horses produce at least one or two, but Secretariat was not the greatest stud.
Well, he had a lot of resources.
Jordan was the third pick, by the way.
Right. Well, but the the first pick, they had a guy sort of like him, right?
Well, the first pick was Olajuwon.
Right.
The second pick was Sam Bowie. That's the one everyone goes to. How the hell could you draft Sam Bowie ahead of Jordan? And then Jordan went number three.
Because they had what's-his-name they thought was as good, the same position.
The Blazers?
Yeah, Clyde Drexler, Clyde the Glide.
Clyde the Glide.
Yeah.
Clyde the Glide, yep.
Yeah, but he was a... such a gangly colt. He reminds me of your description on the guy in Milwaukee when you saw him, Matty.
Oh, when I saw Giannis the first time when he was a 17-year-old rookie coming off the bench for Milwaukee, he just jumped off the court. I mean, I was sitting, I had good seats up in Milwaukee, they were playing OKC, and it was back when Durant was there and Westbrook, and I don't think Harden was there still, but they still had Durant. And, I went there to see those guys, and all of a sudden this young guy comes off the bench, 17-year-old rookie, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, this guy is going to be – he was a little uncoordinated, but I was like, this guy's going to be a superstar. And you could just see it. And he only played like 12 minutes, but in those 12 minutes, he made every possible play. And, of course, now he's an MVP.
Well, the weird part about Secretariat is Arlington Park, I went to see him run. I drove all the way from
South Bend. Not comparing NBA players to horses.
No, well, but it's not just genes, it's personality. I never saw them saddle a horse in front of the stands before. He just was looking in the stands. I'm cool.
You know what? It's so funny because during that same period, actually, my dad had a horse that was the best horse we ever had, and the same year was 73, and he was Varsity King, and he had the same demeanor as Secretariat. And actually, when that horse was in the winner's circle, when you win a race, they take the picture.
Yep.
The horse would turn his head towards the camera. Guys, I got to hop here in a minute. You want to talk market at all?
Yeah, what do you make this?
Buy bankrupt stocks and watch them go up?
Every single stock in the S&P 500 is up. So it's not like you needed to be a stock picker, Joel.
Yeah, and actually, there was one stock yesterday that Bespoke Investments put out a note, and they said that every stock in the S&P 500 was up except for Cody since the March 23 low, and that stock rallied over $1 yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see what happens. We got a Fed meeting on Wednesday. They're just going to say they're going to pump more money into the economy. So far, you can't fight the Fed.
Well, any chance we get like a super surprise, like 3% CPI number one of these months?
That could happen. I see food prices are on a tear, but really, I think the only thing right now that would derail this market is, a second wave of the virus, and there's absolutely no way to predict that.
Well, let's hope we don't get that, because I don't want it, and you don't want
no,
it.
No, no one does.
Take care of yourself, buddy. S&P futures down 26. NASDAQ futures down 46. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 22. We've come back some. NASDAQ futures down 39.75. So we were down more earlier, but we're coming back. Virtually every stock in the Dow 30 is down, but they've been up for so long. Kenny, how are you, bud?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I understand that you got rid of all your holdings a week ago and put them all in Boeing, and now you're... You are even more wealthy than you were before. You're like the Mexican guys who knew what that the devaluation was coming and got your money in dollars and came back 20% richer the next day.
I don't know where you get your information.
I have sources. I got my guys. I didn't say they were good guys, but they were guys.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, this market action, right? It just doesn't want to quit. I mean, today it's going to take a little bit of a breather, but that's nothing considering the move that it's had, right?
Yeah, you know, the weird part is, Kenny, why do even me, who does nothing but dig into the Fed actions over the last 40 years and think that really virtually all of the market move, not valuation, and that comes down to earnings and all the other stuff, but all the up and down moves that were anywhere near, I'm going to say unusual, have been caused by the Fed in my lifetime.
Well, they have been for in our lifetime,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
they have been caused by the Fed.
And I'm just going to say, if you and I think we've agreed on many occasions that if you just double the amount of money in the economy, what would happen to the stock market? It would go up. It would double. Right. So
yes, it would.
So now they're putting the money supply could conceivably be up 25% this year. So why are we shocked that every single day the market is now revaluating to the upside to essentially account for that? And that's what it's doing.
I'm not necessarily sure that... I think some people might be shocked. I think others that understand it are absolutely not shocked, right? Because as they say, there is no alternative, right? Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go with your money? And where are you going to go with all the liquidity that the Fed is, and every other central bank, by the way, is providing around the world? And so you see it happening across the spectrum, right? Around the globe, you see it happening. Global markets all rally.
The only thing I'm concerned...
I do think...
Why do you think, Kenny... Sorry, if I sneak a question. Why do you suppose that gold and silver are such a laggard? Do you think that there's a country that's liquidating?
Well, you know, there is that speculation that is going on. But I'm not necessarily sure that gold and silver... I don't think that's the reason. I actually just think that there's this renewed sense that the economy is going to be fine, the global economy is going to come back, that everything is going to be returned to normal. So there's a kind of a risk off in terms of the safety trade that gold and silver play, because people are feeling, I think, more comfortable. But on the other hand, if you start talking about printing money and how inflationary it's going to be, then you know gold and silver would be the place to go, right?
Well, Kenny,
I don't think anybody at the moment feels that that's going to happen.
Well, I don't think anybody, even you who are, I think, more into this than virtually anybody else I talk to, even you and even me, we're just not ready for the totality of it. I mean, if the Fed put the money supply up 100% this year, even my truck would double, but I'd still be stunned it happened. I'd try and find another reason it couldn't just be that. I mean, you have people on CNBC all day long trying to find other reasons why we're going up. There are no other reasons. Well, there might be, but they're small compared, really.
Right. There are no other reasons, but they have to find a reason. They have to find, you know, an explanation when they get on TV to explain to people why it's going up or why it's going down. Every you know, for every point that goes up or down, someone's got an explanation on why that's happening, which is very, very frustrating. It's one thing if the market goes up or down 1,000 points. It's more of a conversation. But, you know, this morning I'm watching TV, and I'm watching Andrew Ross Sorkin. So, you know, the market's under pressure. Under pressure? Okay, the Dow's off 200 points.
Yeah.
Really, it's under pressure?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Based on what's been happening, the market's not under pressure. It's just trading. It's consolidating.
Well, it's a minor hiccup on half the day yesterday.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
I mean,
you know, if this morning we get up and futures were down 1,200 points, I'd say, okay, the market's under pressure. But down 200 points or down 15 points on the S&P is not a market under pressure after the move we've had. It's a market that's trying to consolidate and find, you know, some stability. Do I think it's ahead of itself? I absolutely think that where the market is absolutely ahead of where the economy is and is going to be in even 4 or 6 months. But like you said, where else are you going to go? And the Fed keeps adding liquidity, so why should anybody be surprised that the market gets ahead of itself?
Well, Kenny, what do you suppose behind the scenes? I mean, I'm going to say I love having you on because you have your finger on the pulse of the world. You're in New York Stock Exchange, those kinds of things. You know all the right guys. You got the real guys. What do you suppose the implicit promise is to places like United Airlines and Boeing? I mean, I'm just stunned. I mean, I did some work. I don't usually do this because I'm more of an index guy. But a few weeks ago, I actually dug into the balance sheets and the income statements of United Airlines for the last 10 years. That's where I came up with the part where they started out with like a $37 billion balance sheet, and now they still got a $37 billion balance sheet. And they made like that kind of money. They made almost that same amount during the year and spent it all on stock. So they end up with no real growth, maybe a little bit of growth in the balance sheet. But instead of the balance sheet now being, you know, 57, and you bought stock with 17 or something, they just bought it all, which is insane to me. I mean, you would think somewhere along the line you'd have showed up at Boeing with a check for a plane and not a lease agreement somewhere. I mean, I know they're not going to own all their planes, but you would think that if I or you was on the board, you or I were on the board, we'd say, look, if I'm going to be here 10 years, how about we set a goal that 10 years from now we own 10% of our stock or 5 or something instead of like 0. I'm sure they own some of the old ones or something, but they bought them back, that kind of crap. But basically, I think every new one they lease, don't they?
Right, but I think they lease it. But I think there's a tax and business benefit to just rolling them over and leasing them versus owning them. I think there's, and I don't know much about the airline industry in that sense. So I don't know how they run their books. But I have to believe that they're leasing, all these companies are leasing these planes because there's a bigger benefit to leasing them than not.
I just think they want the cash to buy the stock back. I just, you know.
Well, I mean, listen, that could be too, right? It's also a cash management issue, so maybe you're right. Maybe they're just leasing and then they're using the cash to do other things, whether it's buy stock back or other CapEx issues, although I'm not sure. I think it's probably more on your side, right, where they're buying the stock back, which goes to the argument now that's come up as a result of this crisis. Why don't these guys have money to support themselves? Because they've been spending all the money to buy stock back.
Right. Well, I mean, as I said earlier before you came on, Cameron, there's no amount of planning, you know, airlines could have done for this.
I mean,
even if they'd have kept every dime and not paid a dividend, instead of a $40 billion payoff, it's going to be 10. You know, but the point is, why is it so big? But my question to you is, if you were to take some kid out of first year accounting at whatever school he's in, and you look at the United Airlines numbers, and you look at where they're at today and how much money they're losing by day. And even if you string out, I mean, some intelligent guy was on, talking about airlines are back because they've gone from 90% down in care in people to like 86. Now, granted, you got to start somewhere, right? The journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step, but you're still losing money today. And by any stretch, you know, fast forward to September, you and I are doing the show, they're going to be losing money that day too, Kenny. Fast forward to next September, they're going to be losing money that day too. Not just, hopefully just a little bit, but they're still not going to be in the plus, cash or right. total. So the idea, I mean, I guess my question to you is long-winded. What have they been promised? What does the market think they've been promised by the government? Where thing goes up 5%. Have they been promised a zero-interest loan, like any number they want? I mean, there's obviously, the market's not this stupid. They must think that there's some kind of, Boeing's the same way. You don't get a stock doubling in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, but Boeing didn't come to Boeing didn't go to the government. Boeing raised their own money, right? They went to a bond issue.
No, they
raised their money because specifically they didn't want to have that association. They didn't want the government buying part of them. They didn't want the government control, so they actually didn't do anything.
They blew through a $12 billion line of credit like dinner through a goose, Kenny.
Well, understood, but look what happened to them, right? They blew through that because their business went off the edge after they couldn't straighten out the 737 MAX issue and then all the other issues that started coming up as a result of that. Every day there was another negative headline in Boeing.
Well, that's another thing. Right? But if you put a pencil and 14-column paper to Boeing, when are they going to start delivering these planes? And they're making more of them now.
Yeah, they're making more of them. They're making more of them, so I have to believe the delivery process is going to start. What's it, a two-year delivery process? Is that what it is?
I don't know, but what airline wants them?
Yeah, well, apparently if they're starting to build them again, there must be indications from airlines that want them as long as these issues are fixed. I mean, look what the stock has done. I mean, look what the stock has done since the lows of March, right? It's gone up almost 100%.
What I'm saying, right?
It went from 100 to 230.
But there's some story behind the story. It's not just you and I looking at the numbers saying, hey, these guys don't look so hot. I mean, somebody somewhere has promised them something.
Yeah. No, well, I guess that too will come out in the wash one day, as everything always does. But
Kenny,
I'm not sure who or what, but if that's the case, that too will come out in the wash. But I do think that the stock had gotten so beaten up with negative headlines day after day after day after day that it hit a bottom. It had a very successful bond launch there, a bond offering there, whatever it was, a month ago, a month and a half ago, and the stock has done nothing now but rally. Certainly the market has rallied. But the stock has done nothing but rally, and now they're starting to come out with good news. Now, you know, is that helping? Yeah, sure, it's helping. But is there another message that the market perceives that we don't see yet or we don't know yet? Could be.
You and I are just too old to think that debt is a cure for everything.
Yeah, I hear you.
Kenny, take care. Hey, did you ever get the antibody test?
I did. I told you, and I have the antibody.
And so you're good to go. Now, what number are you?
Well, I should be good to go.
But aren't there numbers?
Now there's even a question about that. They don't know, well, are you really? You're not. They're not sure yet. Am I good to go? I feel fine. I have no issues. I have no lingering issues. But, yeah, actually, I was going to get it done again because, you know, they had that guy on CNBC, that Dr. Scott Gottlieb, that was saying that some of the tests give you false positives or false negatives. So the suggestion was you should go out and have the test taken again. So I was going to go have it taken again. But if I go down and give blood to my plasma, right, because I was going to give the plasma
the test. Well, hey, you were going to send some of that plasma up here.
Yeah.
I take yours. You're the same.
Did you ever get the test?
No, you're the same nationality, Brother Paisan. I'd be happy to have your plasma. take care of yourself. SP Futures down 26, NASDAQ Futures down 37. Back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Blown up by Stocks and Jocks. Tom Tamale, he's Mr. Mill. Over. S&P futures up, down 27. It's going to be hard for me to say down this whole show because we've been up so much. NASDAQ futures down 36. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph. Well, Jeff, how are you, buddy?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, two things before we get off on stuff that you want to talk about and your new issue of the magazine. We had Carl on the other day, and he was talking, and I haven't noticed this all that much, but I've had a few people tell me, talk about generational stuff, Jeff. I was with a couple of Audrey's friends, and, of course, one of them has a daughter who's making more money at home with the $600 kicker than she ever has working, right? And,
right.
And it's not exactly the, let's just say she must have got the dad's genes when it came to work, not the mom's. Is that a fair statement? Nice, politically correct statement? She is not going back to work until it's totally safe and thinks they should pay the extra $600 a month, like, for the whole end of the year. Well, that's a point of view. But I think there's
That's not likely going to happen right now. You're seeing that. So on your first question here, you're seeing that bubble up in the legislature already. It's become apparent, although they haven't well quantified it, but anecdotally it's become very apparent that the universal application of the $600 resulted in outpayment, you know, excessive payment for many, which gave them a negative incentive to return to work. The restaurants, more than any industry, are feeling that, and as a result of that, they're having difficulty hiring people back because their net wages would be less than what they're receiving as a result of the $600. So if there's another stimulus, which even now is a bit in question as a result of the jobs number a couple days ago and, you know, what appears to be a little bit more resilient economy than we thought, that is not likely to be a component within it. So it has become clear that there is a negative incentive to return to work, and obviously for political and economic reasons, I would not see an administration continuing with that.
Well, you've got a really kind of stunning somewhere buried here. Since I stopped running all this stuff off, Jeff, you've been here. You've seen what the place looks like with me stopping running stuff off like a couple of years ago, right? I used to run all this stuff off, and my brother said, you killed another tree yet this week, you know, type of thing. So I stopped doing that, but I also lose stuff. I was stunned. I had a big chart of how many people, how many industries. I guess if you add the $600 to the regular unemployment, you're pushing $24 an hour, essentially, to stay home.
Yeah.
And the amount of industries there are where the pay is under that is startling.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you would think that, you know, that most people would make that, but they don't. And,
right.
But anyway, I wrote everybody a thing last night. Of course, since I put the thing in the wrong line, it didn't come through. Put another new law. You know what they're thinking about now in Washington to combat what we just were talking about?
What's that?
A $450 a week bonus to go back to work.
Yeah, is that something?
could we? I got to believe this is. If you're sitting there listening to this, you know, in outer space on the radio, you got to wonder what's wrong with these people. First, they're paying people to stay home. Now they're paying them to go back to work.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Listen, I had to listen without breaking into a smile. We're fortunate and pleased, of course, to have Stephanie Kelton to interview her for our next issue. She, of course, you know, we've talked about her, I think. She'll become a media darling very soon. Her book releases on June 9th, in a couple days. And I expect you'll see a lot of Stephanie Kelton as the go-to economist on CNN and MSNBC, and for Democratic causes, you're going to see that face a lot going forward.
How about Stocks and Jacks?
Because she is the principal advocate of modern monetary theory, which
I'm not so sure what that is.
Of course, you know, it's beyond Keynesian. It basically postulates that if you were a sovereign currency, if you have monetary sovereignty, which basically means you print your own currency, that you never have to worry about deficits because you can just continue to print money. And oddly enough, it's one of the few things that the majority of economists on the left and the right, you know, traditional economists, just believe is hogwash. It's one of the few things where Austin Goolsbee and Paul Krugman agree with, you know, their counterparts on the right. And yet I guarantee you she will become a very, very prominent face. So much I'm currently debating whether or not she'll be on the cover of our next magazine, just because it, you know.
It was either her or me.
Yeah, she'll be a big thing. And it's, you know,
no.
It is nothing more than a different way to package fiscal irresponsibility, and you know, obviously there's a theory behind it, but
there isn't.
An author who wrote the counter argument that will appear in the magazine next month as well in our next issue, he made the case that modern monetary theory has a lot in common with a parrot, and what they have in common is neither are modern, neither are monetary, and neither one is really a theory. So it was kind of, so we have some interesting take on it, and you know, I think we're going to see a lot more of these things.
I'm
going to
say
just being promoted because it's a blank check for the Green New Deal and for complete irresponsibility, and to continue to be able to fund any cause, you know, that might be the cause of the moment for whatever administration. I can see why, listen, the Republicans have nothing to be proud about when it comes to deficit spending at all. And I can see how easy it will be for any administration to adopt this mentality because it justifies their lack of concern of budget or deficit spending.
You know why this is coming out? Well, I think, I mean, you know why, is the intermediate step between, I'm going to say, grandpa's generation where you paid your debts and now. The intermediate step that I'm sure you know, Jeff, but I'll bring it out there for the rest of everybody, is you never have to worry, you have to manage your debt. Okay, it was the debt management issue. So if your economy is growing 3% a year in real terms, now we don't even talk about real terms anymore now. It's all nominal terms.
Yeah.
You have to totally drop off the real terms for her stuff to make any sense at all. So you drop off the real versus nominal, meaning money-wise. And the deal was 10 years ago, the Goolsbees of the world and so forth, was if you could just... if you're growing 3% a year and your debt is growing 2.95% a year, don't ever worry about paying it off. It's manageable as long as it's in a decreasing or not increasing mode. So by the year 3000, if you're growing at 3% and your debt's growing at 2.95, it'll get paid off. You don't have to worry about it. So any plan that anybody comes up with, even Trump's, I'm not saying it was a bad idea totally, even Trump's really stupid tax decrease for people. Okay, now tax decrease is not stupid for most people, but the idea, it was justified by we're going to end up, the economy is going to grow so much faster because of this that the, even though we're adding 5% to the, or 10% or whatever to the, deficit, that we're going to cause the growth to go from 2.5 to 3.5. And by the way, after this year, our growth in debt is only going to be 3, and our growth is going to be 3.5. So in the long run, so people started to justify deficits based on this growth versus debt thing. And you could go out 10 years, and that's why they had this 10-year target on everything. What's it going to be like at the end of 10 years? And if it's accretive after 10 years, it's okay, even though it might make zero sense today. Well, now they've gone, and I'll say this about her. I think the entire thing is hogwash. But I'll say this, in terms of what the strict definition, Jeff, and this is where she and the rest of them are probably correct, and if you want evidence to that fact, go back to the Weimar Republic. If you could create your own deficit, your own currency, you will never go bankrupt as a country, because you'll just print enough to buy it yourself.
That is 100% true,
yeah.
And I don't think that's really... I don't think there's any serious contention against that claim. The problem is, we've seen aggressive Keynesian tactics used during crisis and, you know, during World War II. I mean, we've seen that, and it works. And what you just said is true. You technically, you know, you can print that money in that scenario. The problem is using it as ongoing policy. That it is, you know, it's not just for those kind of emergency or crisis periods. And that's where the problem clearly becomes apparent, because there's just no scenario whereby an ongoing policy would not be inflationary. Which of course is the number one concern about, you know, just printing money, right?
Well, if you're just the government, Jeff,
and then add that to your concern, which you've articulated on many occasions about what's the reality of inflation, and if you adopt that type of monetary policy in this environment, where you accept the only risk here is inflation, and by the way, if that occurs, and this is postulated by modern monetary theory as well, you simply raise taxes, and you know, simply raising taxes is not a.
Well, you can't raise taxes if people don't have money. You can raise them all you want, you're not going to get anything.
Well, that is the only solution under modern monetary theory to correct an inflationary environment.
As
a result of the excessive.
Let's go back to the beginning.
Increasing the monetary supply.
Let's go back to the beginning a little bit, Jeff, because since you brought this up, the one way to get yourself out of debt is to inflate your way out of it. I mean, correct? If all of a sudden we doubled the money supply and I owed you $100, I'm the happiest man on earth, right?
Right.
Because now the $100 is...
Yeah.
Is, I mean, it should be $200.
Now my $50 will pay you off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And the thing that horrifies me, and that is the right word. For some reason, Jeff, I started researching hyperinflation in other countries. I can't really dig out. I actually dug out some pretty good stuff on Iran, but as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of articles coming out of Iran that I can read. And Venezuela is pretty much clammed up as well.
Yep.
However, there is a boatload of info. Not only that, I have a friend from the Federal Reserve who's a historian on the era of the Weimar Republic. And they did it for a purpose. They inflated the hell out of the place because they were paying reparations to France and Britain that they felt they couldn't afford to pay. So they're paying, I'll keep it simple, the U.S. had to pay France $20 billion a year. Okay? That's what the contract said, or the treaty, or the loan. And all of a sudden we said, well, it just says $20 billion. It doesn't say what kind of $20 billion, right? Mm-hmm. So let's start pouring money into the system. And all of a sudden, 6 months later, the $20 billion is worth, I mean, $20 billion was worth what $1 billion used to be. Right? Now, the part that as I listen to people on CNBC giddy all day about the stock market, meanwhile, the Weimar stock market is going to the moon. Right? Because in terms of their dollars, it's going up, up, up. Correct? Because the dollar value, yeah, or the dollar value is going down, down, down. So, but what you miss is, you've obliterated your citizenry along the way. And I pity the poor bastard who had 100,000, whatever these things were, in the bank that are now worth $5. Right? I mean, you obliterated that. The government actually called it a success. Sort of like what this lady's group is going to call this a success. And I had this, Jeff, I want you to grade me on this. I had this conversation with Audrey and her pals this weekend. Can you even imagine me ever saying this? I'm dying to have you on today because I want to ask you this. Is my more soberest minded person I have. I said to them, you know, you guys, I think, can go get a loan. One of these, you know, the ones you don't have to pay back if you pay people. And they said, well, I don't really have any employees. I said, well, you don't now. But based on what I read or what I've heard, you can go get one of these loans. And hire somebody. By the way, your business is really good this year. You're running all over the place. You could use a helper. Pay somebody. I mean, and if you're getting 30 grand, 40 grand, whatever it is, they said, well, I don't really deserve it. I said, by the way, you know, well, you know what, Jeff, I felt the same way, you know, with the loans of other people have gotten in their businesses, but now I don't. Because what I see with these people do, can you imagine me saying this? I mean, you don't know me that well, but you know me enough. You imagine me saying this ever in my lifetime? I had to get this old. Yeah. I said, you guys don't understand. This money that you have, that you've saved up, your business is worth 150 grand, 200 grand, whatever it is, in a real estate business or whatever. I said, in a year or two, that 150 grand is going to be worth only 100 because of what they're doing. I said, everybody else is getting this shot, basically, in the ass with this money. I said, if you don't get your piece, you're going to fall behind for no reason under your own. It's like if I'm the one company that doesn't take my taxes overseas and everybody else is, and I'm paying 35 and they're paying 20, that's a massive competitive disadvantage. If we go to buy the same other company, they're outbid me by 15% on somebody else's dough. I said, have you ever heard me say something? But if you don't, because what they're doing, your money right now, a year from now, is going to be worth 15% less. If you don't go get the money they're asking you to take to make that up for you, you're out of your mind. It has nothing to do with right or wrong at this stage. It has to do with being part of the policy. Right?
No. And these guys, contributing to fraud, make a lot of sense.
Well, but I'm saying it's not about that. They're talking about helicopter money. Their intention is to give it to anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, my brother, who's could be the out of the rest of other than the people in this show, could be the most honest man that ever walked. He goes, I can't believe that if somebody gets his $1,200 check and the guy or lady's dead, they're telling people to cash it. Now, if it's Social Security, that's fraud. If you're a pure Keynesian, if we're going to go back to this pure economics that these idiots think that they're actually using, it doesn't matter, Jeff. You open up a suitcase of $100 bills at State and Madison, you don't care even who grabs them. That's what helicopter money's all about. We don't even care. So if we're giving, if we're stuffing $300 in everybody's pocket walking down Michigan Avenue, that's idiotic. But if you don't get your $300, that's even worse. Because guess what? You're going to the same saloon tonight and buying a hamburger, and the hamburger is up 30%, and they can afford it, and you can't.
That's right.
I mean, what I just said is the dumbest thing I've ever said, and yet it is, I can't believe we're there. Right now, it's the truth.
Well, we are there, but you know, it doesn't go on forever. I mean,
well, how do you know? It gets worse by the
airlines, day. In the prior segment, and you know, everyone's looking to October 1st when the CARES money runs out and the stipulated provisions to maintain 75% of your employees runs out and the funds to pay it and the layoffs begin. You know, October 1st is when we pay the piper.
There'll be another plan. Jeff, these guys are that far down the road, and now they have books behind them written by people. There'll be another package in October. This is insanity.
Well, but sure, that's why the election's going to matter too, and the composition of the House and Senate will matter, and there'll be it's going to be a difficult time ahead.
Oh, I think it's going to be. I don't know how you get these 40% of the people. Even I was talking earlier. Even Jim Cramer, who I'm not, you know, a massive fan of, I respect his knowledge in a lot of areas. This is the biggest wealth transfer he's ever seen.
Yes,
into a few big companies that somehow. I mean, talk about buying.
Yeah, that's the true irony is how these large companies have benefited from that at the expense of, you know, we were always smart to note over the last decade that small business was responsible for 50% of the employment of the workforce, and it's that 50% that's really, really getting decimated here, and you know, the lockdowns also, you know, are the impact that they've had on small business are immeasurable, and it's going to take some time for the dust to settle that. I'll tell you the one question I've been pondering, and I'm, you know, beginning particularly with the news out of the CDC yesterday and what I've feared for some time and what I think many people have known to be true, is that, you know, that we had a complete overreaction on a global basis to the pandemic from an economic standpoint, and that this has become politically motivated. I think there's just no way you can come to the conclusion. But I'm just curious how many people are there yet. I mean, I would say that if I were to ask the question, and I am going to ask the question, I'm going to set up a poll to ask this question. I'm just very curious as to the response. How many people believe that, you know, by the end of this year, when all the numbers are in and all the data is in, and we fully understand the mortality of COVID, and we understand the economic costs of the lockdowns, how many people are going to feel that we overreacted, did the right thing, or underreacted, you know, in terms of the shutdowns and lockdowns?
Who felt that way?
Just go back to tribal partisanship.
Yeah.
It's odd that this became such a tribal partisan issue, but is that what's going to happen? Despite evidence in their face that, you know,
some people were,
you know, that 15 million people remain out of work, and 20% of small businesses are shut down and will never recover, and suicides are spiking. Are we still going to say, yeah, we had to keep 30-year-olds from standing within 2 feet of each other, even though they were asymptomatic?
We have no ability to back off. Somebody should just say, it looks as time goes by, where the guy in Italy, who's now convinced that the virus is actually weakened,
mm-hmm.
that the people that are getting it are not as near as sick as they were 4 months ago, they're vilifying that guy. Because it's all sure. Now about whether or not you were... I mean, do you think that Lori's ever going to go back on her? I'm going to say, Jeff, that on St. Patrick's Day, when you didn't know what you had, and the hospitals were filling up, the 15-day, 30-day thing was probably the same thing that I would have done.
Oh, of course.
And
yeah.
But then I'm going to say, make sure I'm right on this week, because I know the costs. But the people that we have in office have never had a business, don't care about it. All they care about is public employees, because they're the ones who vote for them.
That's right.
And so they don't have any sort of an idea that the Luckbox magazine, I'll use that as an example, that Jeff, because he thinks it's a thing for the future, and by the way, so do I, Jeff will do whatever he has to do. He'll take money out of his 401k or whatever to keep this thing going for 30 days, but you can't ask him to do that for 6 months. I mean, it ain't happening. I mean, or 7 months or whatever your personal thing happens to be, because somewhere along the way, you know, the wife's going to bat you upside the head with a frying pan if it's your entire, you know. So I mean, it's
the other side of the head.
Yeah, the other. But so I mean, now it comes down to ego. I mean, now does anybody really think that you shouldn't sit inside in a restaurant? You can only sit out. I mean, come on, because obviously you have places that don't have an outside. Now you really, so now people that are going out can only go to half the places. I mean, you know, what are we doing here? I mean, instead of saying
this has been a a media and politically driven. Actually, and it was just interesting to see how quickly it was abandoned when there was a new story to champion, because there was nothing to talk about but the pandemic, and then. Then, of course, you know, we had an atrocious event, and the media shifted gears and, you know, started promoting a very, very new narrative, which completely discarded another one, and we move on, you know.
Well, Jeff, I was listening back in the day, and I'll be real brief with this, we'll have a minute, listening to Jay Pritzker having one of his really ignorant Sunday afternoon press conferences, and I don't know whether it was half guys, half girls in the room, who the hell knows, but let's just say that he got five women in a row that were on him like your mom when you didn't clean out the garage. And it was like, well, this other governor says everybody has to wear a mask. Why don't you ever? It was this, well, no, you don't care about safety. You don't care about. They were on him like white on rice. And, right. And I'm sitting there, you put yourself up to this. If you ever say, I don't necessarily think that the mask thing makes that big of a difference walking down the street, he had no chance of that. He got in charge of the. And I knew the next day we're going to see governor says you got to wear a mask. There it was. It had nothing to do with science. It had nothing to do with anything. It had to do with.
Why are you telling me that mayors could be, you know, subject to mob rule or crowd rule?
I
certainly didn't see any indication of that in Minneapolis yesterday.
Oh, you didn't see it here too. I mean, I've had one of my buddies, my attorney buddy, stop by for lunch yesterday. And he goes, "Let me get this straight. You can go out and protest, and you can loot, and it's okay. You can't go to church." Because what the hell kind of society are we in?
Sure.
SP Futures down 23, NASDAQ Futures down 34. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now, right here, right now, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 26. We've been pretty much down right about this number since we came in. It's ducked a little bit lower, came back a little bit. We were down 30. We were down 22, and now we're kind of back at the 26. NASDAQ down 34. We've got every stock in the Dow 30. Actually, no, United Health is up 27 cents, but some of the stocks have been way up. We've got Boeing down 6, which seems like a lot, but since the thing's been up like $50 in the last couple of days, it's not all that much. American Express down 292. And we've got, what are the big ones we got moving here? Nothing. JP Morgan down 295, but nothing huge, like we have been seeing. Transportation average, all the ones that are up and running here, those are also down. Maddie, can you do a traffic weather sports first? I can do it. The Dow futures are down, 233. And, let's go over to Europe here. I'll do this in a second. Alright, here we go. Man, you know, see, I'm not that big on these computer things. Are they going to become something everybody uses one of these days, you think? DAX down 181, 1.4%. FTSE down 101, 1.6%. CAC Ron's down 63, 1.2%. Jeff's wondering why he's on the show with this guy that can't even run a computer. Nikkei down 87, 0.4%. Shanghai up 18, 0.6%. Hang Seng actually up 280, 1.1%. We come back, I'm going to ask Jeff, why the hell this Hong Kong market is not down more than it's been up since all the problems started. By the way, there's another thing that's off the news items too, is that thing. 10-year yield, 0.83. That's down from the 0.88 yesterday. Bund, minus 0.32. Japan, positive 0.02. It was positive 0.04. Oil, down 23 cents now. It's making a little bit of a comeback. 37.96, hovering around that $38 number. Brent down 35 cents, 40.45. Natural gas, 179. RBOB, 119. We've got gold is up 13.50, 17.18. Silver is unchanged at 17.90. A copper up another penny, creep, 257. It got down, I believe, to 228, 218, somewhere down there. So it's made somewhat of a comeback. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways as we have been all morning. Absolutely no delays, accidents, or closures to speak of. So enjoy a nice quiet commute as you're heading into downtown. We have one closure in the area and it's off the expressways.
It's actually Pershing Road between Campbell Avenue and Southwestern Avenue in the city. Pershing Road is closed due to police activity. Apparently there's an investigation into an off-duty Chicago police officer who was shot in the leg and transported to the hospital earlier this morning. And so there apparently is an investigation taking place that has Pershing Road closed between Campbell and Southwestern, so keep that in mind. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some sunshine early, as you're seeing right now out your window, but rain coming later on, a steamy high of 86, and even warmer inland, similar to yesterday. Right now it is partly cloudy and 75 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 95 today. Right now it's clear and 74. Chief.
Hey, Jeff, I want to get your review. I mean, we got so many things we can. What is your, did you happen to spot that Jenner and Black lawsuit, Freddie?
No, did not see that.
They evidently have not paid $3.8 million in rent in the last few months. And now the building is, they've got some kind of a lease. Jen Flanagan, of course, is all over his stuff because Jen's used to lecture at Chicago Title and Trust and then taught law and real estate law at universities forever. Knows this stuff backwards and forwards. But evidently there's some time in these leases that if there's things that you can't get in the building or whatever, sometimes there's... Anyway, they haven't paid, and then the building is suing them. So who the hell knows who's right, wrong, or wherever. But my question to you is, are idiots, are political geniuses that, like you say... oh, by the way, real quick, what Jeff alluded to before the break that he didn't get a chance to finish is the World Health Organization. Is this what you're talking about, Jeff? They just come out and said that if you are asymptomatic, you also probably are not passing it to any other person. It's not that you can't, but it's rare that you do. Now, if that's the truth, every
kind of a game changer.
Every single grammar school, high school that closed was closed in error. Correct?
Yes.
Colleges, I don't know. Colleges, some people are probably, maybe there's some people that are symptomatic at that age, but maybe not. They should never have closed. Because not only are they probably not sick themselves, they're not passing on to anybody else.
Yep.
Which is interesting. But where do you think this all lands? As a matter of fact, the young lady I was telling you about didn't want to go back to work, Jeff. She had it all figured out. It's not safe for her to go back to work. She's not going to get in an elevator close to people. What if she's in an elevator with somebody without a mask? You can't put her in that situation. I think we have managed to... as one of my buddies in college used to say, what a tangled web we have weaved. Well, where is this all going to come out? Now, if I, 175, even our building, we happen to have, Jeff, oh, you've been here, the one elevator is the smallest elevator in the city, and I think it's the oldest.
Hmm.
Now, I don't think you can stand 6 foot apart in here. Does that mean that we don't have to pay the rent?
Hey, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's actually what Luckbox Magazine, that's what we're working on right now for our next issue, is we're talking to REITs, we're talking to NAREIT, we're talking to commercial REITs and trying to get down to what the real numbers are on tenant defaults and non-payments and what type of negotiations are occurring right now and trying to really take a look at the REIT sector, who's most exposed. It's not easy getting this data right now, particularly because you're dealing with public companies and they have, you know, there's only so much you're going to get out of them outside of an earnings cycle or season. But I think we all know intuitively that the type of lawsuits you just alluded to, with respect to a building, you know, might be compromising the safety of its employees by not having certain precautions or distance or enabling certain amount of distancing, or what you just referred to about Jenner and Block, large corporation, particularly accounting and legal, large architectural firms, all these firms are really second-guessing the amount of square footage that they have. Law firms, you know, they sit on a lot of office space, and they're second-guessing that entirely. You know, we know that, as everyone knows, that Google and Facebook, have told their employees that they don't need to come back through 2020, and that's a given. So... you know, that's the next big question is what will the new office space look like? And who's going to win and who's going to get hurt as a result of it? That we're looking down to the individual tickers in the REIT sector and trying to identify who has the most exposure there and who doesn't.
The people that I've tried to talk to this subject, and by the way, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Well, how is it that your magazine, and this is not blowing smoke up your behind. You guys are always a month ahead of what of the problems. How the hell do you do that?
You know, thank you. That's really what we're trying.
I love you, man. It can't be you.
The Wayne Gretzky thing that's been beat you know to a meme, but that's what we focus on. We're trying to.
Well, who's the guy?
What's happening? So, yeah, thanks for saying that. We certainly have been ahead in terms of electronic gaming and the China issues.
Yeah,
we brought China up long before it became a popular theme. Just yesterday, a reader sent me something that was written in The Hill or The Guardian. I forget where it was, but basically used the expression in its headline, Blinded by Science, which was an op-ed I wrote a couple of weeks ago talking about how, you know, basically, that's how we kicked off our last issue, basically saying, you know, we got to knock it off with this believe in science thing when it comes to something like the novel coronavirus, which is by definition novel, so there's no, you know, reliable science whatsoever. It was not an indictment of science. I believe in science. I believe in math, but only where it exists, not just because someone has a lawn sign that says I believe in science. It still doesn't mean anything. You know, there's no real science, and we're beginning to see, as the CDC showed us again yesterday, that the science is evolving every single day. So the best parallel we could have came up with then was, you know, it'd be like having science dictate your economic policy is like having economists, you know, dictate your cultural policy, right? Those are big mistakes.
Well, but I think, Jeff, as I age, I realize that the best I ever saw of this was Sammy Sosa in front of Congress, but telling not all the truth is to me sometimes worse than telling a lie. I mean, the person who's going to be on the cover of the new monetary theory, I mean, what she just said, I think is very accurate, but it's 5% of the picture.
That's right.
I mean,
it's perfect timing because it certainly works for right now. I mean, the last thing you can think about is deficits when you're trying to dig out of this hole. But you can't dictate along. But that becomes very different when you use it to finance something like a Green New Deal or other projects that, you know, require, you know, a couple decades of commitment.
Well, but you have to.
But I'll shift gears with you. I'll tell you because this is where we're really focusing a lot of time and energy too is, it's still a political season out there. That's the crazy thing about where we are here, right? And in June and so close to a general election, yet we've had now two stories, appropriately dominate the media at the expense of talking about the biggest single question. And we have this big unknown right now, which is, who's running for president on the Democratic side? Because, you know, at this point, I think it's certainly clear that it's not Joe Biden. Whoever his VP running mate is going to be is really, you know, a presidential candidate in many, many ways. And that needs to be the scrutiny that's attached to whoever his VP pick is. And, with our podcast, The Political Trade, which is our podcast on the political prediction markets, we're always looking at, you know, what the numbers look like. Today, the prediction markets have Kamala Harris up to 45. She's been rallying over the last couple of days. So she's trading at 45 cents, which is, you know, implies a 45% probability. Next in line is Val Demings at about 17 cents. And Lance Bottoms, Lana Mayer, is underneath her at about 11 cents right now. But The Hill ran a big story yesterday thinking Condoleezza Rice would be the perfect pick, which was a real interesting name to enter the mix. And I spoke with Rachel Bitticoffer, who's a well-known kind of progressive election data analyst. Her claim to fame is she nailed the 2018 midterms, and she feels as though Susan Rice is going to be the pick. So I'll throw this back at you. Who's your front runner?
I would say
cynically refer to as the presidential nomination.
I would say that Condoleezza Rice is not going to get there because the tyrannical real left doesn't want her at all.
Exactly.
And they can push
absolutely.
Her. You know, it's funny, right. When you talk about the vice president.
But I'll hold you to it. So who would you say the front runner is and why?
I was hoping the lady from Minnesota, but I don't think it's going to go there.
Yeah, that's over too.
Yeah, that's over too. But it's going to have to be, this is the thing. It's going to have to be female. It's going to have to be, if she's black, it's even better.
Yes.
But are we really, as I look across the board here, and I see the idea that in virtually every spot is somebody who's underprepared, not worthy of the job in terms of intellectually and in terms of from president to governor to mayor. I don't know. You know, we mentioned that, but when Harry Truman, have you ever heard this story? When Harry, there was, I don't know who the Roosevelt's first couple of VPs were, his first three, but the guy was not, he was okay as a VP guy because Roosevelt never even let him in a room anyway, which is bizarre. But then when it came for his fourth term, they looked for somebody that was better across a whole part of the country. And Harry Truman was a name that came up. Well, he came in, he hadn't seen the president in months. I don't know where they interviewed him. I think it was the Oval Office. I'm not positive. They brought him in, and he said, I took one look at the man, Roosevelt, didn't realize how much he had degraded. And I'm saying, and I sat down and I go, this isn't an interview for VP. This is an interview for president. I don't think it's anywhere near that bad with Biden, but he looked at it and said, this man's got 4 months to live or 6 months. Roosevelt was tough enough to last, what, like a year or something? But he said, this is an interview for president. So it's not like it's unheard of in this country. I would say that Joe is probably going to be a one-term guy at his age.
Well, that's, and that's why you know who would follow up on that. And that's why you just made a nice compliment about Lookbox magazine looking forward. I think you have to look forward. I mean, this VP pick is a presidential pick. It's not putting him in my Deadpool for the next 4 years, but it's that he's more likely a one-term president because of his age, and that the likely ascension would come from, you know, his ticket to the next role. This is a presidential selection here, which I guess is, if you're going to be confined then to a woman of color, I guess that explains why Kamala Harris is the front runner, because she would have the most experience, you know, of the other names we're mentioning. I personally have a bet on Val Demings in the prediction markets. I bought her at a nickel, and she's trading at 17 cents. So
and she's, for
nice,
everybody,
nice
everybody else.
Nice on the money so far. We'll see how that plays out.
All right, for everybody else, why don't you explain who she is and what's her background?
Well, Val Demings is is out of Florida. She's a Florida congressman.
Right.
She's obviously a woman of color. She's got an interesting story. She's the 10th congressional district since 2017. And, of course, you know, three states really matter in 2020. And Trump won Florida by about 1.2%, where African Americans now make up 18%. And since Florida is the linchpin, unlike Kamala Harris, who does nothing for the Democratic ticket, you know, he's going to win. Biden's going to win California,
yeah.
So she doesn't add there. She's not particularly popular there, and even in national polls before she dropped out of the presidential election, she was only polling in single digits. So I don't think she adds much to the ticket, other than perhaps experience. But Val Demings is she's a very attractive candidate. She was the police chief in Orlando since 2015, so she has a law and order element to her. In fact, she came under a little bit of scrutiny, and this might be something difficult for her, that, you know, there was some allegations of excessive force during her reign as police chief in Orlando, and there were millions of dollars of lawsuit settlements for what were claims of excessive force, but it should not be disqualifying for her, because Kamala Harris has much worse problems in that space. And that's the problem with Harris. You know, Harris is attractive for a lot of reasons, but if progressives look hard at her record, they'll know that, you know, she was for the criminalization of marijuana as state prosecutor before she pulled a full 180. You know, she fought tooth and nail to uphold wrongful convictions that had been secured through misconduct and evidence tampering. She knew of evidence that would exonerate many imprisoned people that she suppressed. The name George Gage, highly searchable name, George Gage and Kamala Harris will haunt her if she's a VP pick. because progressives will not like what she did to that gentleman by any means. And then there's a whole list of names that, you know, that make her unattractive. She's been quietly, now she wants this position really bad. In her favor is that her and Beau Biden, Joe's deceased son, were very dear, close personal friends. But when Kamala Harris sandbagged Biden in that early debate on the busing issue, Jill Biden, Joe's wife, really took offense to that and really, publicly kind of chastised her for that. I think that's somewhat of an issue, although there's been some visible signs of reconciliation since then. She's been quietly working to repair her law and order image. She's working on some joint legislation with Cory Booker right now, and she wants this position. But she's handling it a lot more subtly than Stacey Abrams, who said, hey, you know, I want to be vice president, even though I have no real track record. And
what about you?
Kamala Harris has been working really hard behind the scenes. So, yeah, she's got some real problems from the enforcement side as a prosecutor. And that's a real problem for her. And so I think that, and then Demings has a little bit of issues, but to a much, much lesser degree. I think those are the two primary candidates in the prediction market for good reason, but I don't think there's a clear pick there. I think it's a really...
Plus with this, all the... of course, who knows, the way we switch from one topic to the next, all the stuff that's going on the last week or two could be all forgotten by November. It is interesting how the world that we're in, and I clearly don't know how to deal with it, where everybody, the thoughts that manage to make it to the front, the Twitter, the Facebook, the people who get on News Radio 78, you know, every half hour for the whole friggin' day. So, did these people even vet some of this stuff? I mean, the stuff is stone cold ignorant, half of it. It's not even, you couldn't even, I mean, you, if you vetted any of it, it wouldn't, and I'm not talking about, you know, MSNBC or Fox. I'm talking about just regular news. Do they just take the easiest stuff? I mean, let me ask you this. Let's start with something easy. It's not politically charged. Why do even people, even Fauci, what is our view of our society, the ignorance of it, when we talk about a vaccine for this disease? There is
How
no such
that?
Thing.
I'm amazed by that. I'm very much involved and have a lot of empathy for the restaurant community. And so I'm very involved with groups of restaurateurs and trying to, you know, devise how they return to business. And that's another story we're doing in the next issue of Luckbox magazine, which is free, by the way, digitally, getluckbox.com. But, I was speaking to a restaurant owner yesterday that just said to me, and I just had a blank stare as a response, that she's not going to reopen her restaurant until there's a vaccine. And I'm like, what are you talking about? How long do you think this PPP money runs? The CARES money will run. How can you even have that mentality? I don't know where people are.
No, I mean, you're going down the right road probably, but I'm going to be a little more narrow. The thing they're working on now, in every place on earth, and let's hope they come up with something, is not a vaccine by any kind of definition. So why do we continually use the wrong word when we're talking? Because Fauci came out the other day and he said that if there's a vaccine, it'll probably only last a couple of years. That's because it's not a vaccine.
Because it's not a vaccine.
A vaccine is like a measles vaccine, a polio vaccine, where it gets your body to not let this thing even in. Okay, what they're working on is essentially a flu shot, which means they anticipate what it's going to be. They give you a little bit of it. Your body builds up immunities, and it wears off after a year or two for that particular.
Right.
Why do we have to dumb everybody down? Why can't we just be truthful with people and use the right terms? Which is easy, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, there's never going to come a day when you're going to line up like a flu shot or a polio shot and get the thing and good to go for the rest of your life. When it comes to a coronavirus or a flu or a cold, if you're lucky, you'll anticipate the one that's coming your way, give your body a head start on it, and either you won't get it or you'll get it less than you would have otherwise.
that's what we're looking to do here. We're not even trying for a vaccine, are we?
No, no.
So why don't we keep telling people that?
Yeah, that's not achievable. I will say, and that shifts gears a little bit, but I will say one of the interesting or one of the good things that's come out of this is that there's been aggressive moves by the administration. I don't know the specifics of it, but who's responsible? But let's face it, what we do know is that there's definitely been pressure put on the FDA for a realignment of the FDA trials and considerations, such to the point that we do know that 10 companies, as of last week, have been reported to be working on this kind of prophylactic application that would deliver some immunity, the equivalent of a flu shot, and that under normal circumstances it'd take 2-3 years and the $1 billion per drug is typically what it costs right now to get through FDA second trials. Is about $1 billion to get into the third trials, and about the current numbers, about 1 out of every 20 drugs actually can get through the FDA 3 trials after spending that $1 billion, and we're seeing an acceleration of that. So clearly, FDA regulation, I'm a, despite being libertarian, I believe in the FDA, and it does a lot of good, and I can't advocate getting rid of the FDA or just
talk
out of minds.
Let's talk about this one next week.
It is nice to see that there is some emergency provisions that might end up, seeping its way into regulation that would allow for the faster development of drugs.
Let's talk about this one next week, because that's a big topic, and it's one of my favorites, because I think at the end of the day, it gets even harder, and only the big companies can do it yet again. But let's talk about it next week. S&P futures down 29, NASDAQ futures down 25. NASDAQ's come back. S&P has not. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.